First of all, this situation comes up all the time. It's one of the most common situations in every Shabbos table because, thank God, having wine at the Shabbos table is beautiful. It opens people up for more simcha and for divrei Torah. And a lot of times, especially at my Shabbos meals, I have a big Shabbos meal. So a lot of times people bring a gift of wine. That's their way of, you know? And so they put it on the Shabbos table. So it sounds amazing. The only problem is that there is a problem in halacha called yayin, yayin nesach. What's the problem? The rabbis decreed that idolaters, and maybe all non-Jews, it's unclear, are not allowed to touch, that's how we call it, but we'll see it's not so simple, not allowed to pour, realistically. Wine, why not? For two reasons. One is because we're concerned about intermarriage. Once Jews and non-Jews are drinking together, wine, good wine, it, who knows what's going to happen. Hold on, we'll get there in a second. The second thing is that in the olden days, non-Jews used to pour wine on the Mizbeach. Okay, so that we used to be used sometimes in their idolatrous practices. So that was also the second reason why the rabbis in the Gemara forbade drinking wine that may have been used in idolatrous situations. So with that being said, though, the rabbis themselves said this doesn't always apply. When might it not apply? It doesn't apply when the wine is mivushal. If the wine has been cooked, then you can drink this wine. Okay? Why? Because mivushal wine is considered less high quality. Okay? On our mizbeach, for example, you're not allowed to have mivushal wine. That's altered. It doesn't taste as good. And especially in the olden days, people were sensitive to these things. So it's considered a lower quality wine. That's why often the more expensive wines are the ones that are low mivushal, whereas the cheap stuff that you get from most of the stores, 90% of the wines, are mivushal. Okay? So I'm already giving you a solution. 90% of the time, it's not such a problem. You could see that it is mivushal, and you're out of the problem. You with me? What else do you have to know about this? Sometimes it'll say mifustar, pasteurized, or it says mivushal al yidei pistur. Cooked through pasteurization. What is this referring to? A lot of times wine nowadays, they will cook it for pasteurization purposes to a certain degree. There is a machlokes and halacha whether this counts as mevushal or not. Generally, many rabbis, like I think Rav Moshe Feinstein and I think Rav Adi Yosef, are lenient and say if it says mevushal al yidei pistur, it is still considered mevushal, and therefore it is okay for a non-Jew to pour the wine. Okay? Some are more strict. You should know it could be Chabad is more strict. I'm not really sure. And so if we could avoid this situation, it's better. But if you're already stuck in a situation when the non-Jew has already poured it or something like that, you should know that many, many rabbis are lenient in the Mevushal Mifustar situation. Yeah? Okay. How do you avoid this scenario? The best solution is just put grape juice on the table. Okay, if it's only have grape juice, it doesn't apply for wine. You want people to have a little alcohol, you could put beer. You can have vodka, you can have whiskey, any other alcohol, the decree did not go upon them. Only specifically wine is this, and only mevushal, non-mevushal wine does this decree apply to. Okay, that's one solution. And that's why, like at Rav Machlis and other outreach places, they only have grape juice, probably for other reasons too. But that's one of the solutions. Okay, another solution to the problem, a lot of times what I'll do, people will bring me wine. I'll say, thank you so much. And I put the wine off the table. And then I'll have my friend, or maybe my wife, when I'm greeting everybody, I'll have like a wingman who just checks to make sure that the wines are mivushal. They write on them, cooked. And if they're mivushal, then I don't mind putting them back on the table. If they're not mivushal, then generally what I'll do is I'll just put it aside for the next Shabbos meal when it's just me and Jews. Okay, so that's how I avoid, that's some of the ways in which I avoid this awkward situation. What about non-religious Jews? Okay, so that's the hardest situation. There is an opinion, with some posts are stringent, that even a non-religious Jew, someone who breaks Shabbos openly, he too, you're not supposed to drink his wine. But you should know that many posts are lenient about this. Okay, why? Because nowadays, a lot of times, people who are breaking Shabbos, we consider them a tinok shenishba, We say they didn't know any better. The culture is such that keeping Shabbos is just normal. So by not keeping Shabbos, they're not really rebelling against religion. It's just kind of the norms of society. So especially if someone's a Baal Tshuva, then there's reason to be lenient. If someone was religious and then they went off the derech and they're a proclaimed heretic, so it's hard. Some rabbis are strict and some rabbis are lenient. Okay, it could be in your particular situation for shalom bias. I live with my brother or whatever, something like that. There's all the more reason to take the lenient approach and not to be overly stringent. So you should know it's a machlokas amongst rabbis, and I personally say there's reason to be lenient in that situation. If you can avoid this situation, great. But if it's already there, then fine. Another thing that's important to know is this is only talking about a situation where the wine is open and where they purposefully took the wine and either shook it or poured it. If the wine is closed, this isn't the problem. So in that movie, the wine wasn't open yet. So if they just brought it to you and it hadn't been opened, so the decree doesn't fall. If they just knocked it by mistake, they didn't mean to, also the decree does not fall in that situation. Only if they purposefully poured it would it be a problem. Another thing I'll do often is I'll have like a butler. I'll have my buddy, as a Kenny, you'll be the butler today. He'll be pouring everybody their Kiddush wine. And he gets rid of all the non-mabushal wine right away. He gets rid of all of it. And then he throws it. And then that way, no one's pouring anybody. The butler poured everybody their wine. Okay? If I'm really, really stuck, because again, truthfully, a lot of my meals I have, sometimes most of the people are not Jewish or not religious at some of my seudot. So it's hard. It's hard to navigate. Sometimes you don't even know who's Jewish and who's not. So the easiest thing to do is just take the wine off the table. If for whatever reason the wine got on the table, sometimes I'll say in Hebrew so that at least the religious people understand. Shetadat, everyone should know that not everyone here is Jewish yet. So not all the wine is mevushal. Just be careful, you know? But again, that's a really like worst case situation. Ideally, you want to avoid this halachic problem by just, being smart in all these ways that I've suggested. Is that clear? Anything? More questions will come later, but that's a general overview of avoiding the yayin mevushal situation. In terms of in general at a Shabbos table, do you want wine or do you not want wine? Listen, it depends on the vibe. I can say it's the end of the seminary year. You're going to be in real life situations, especially if you're going to college campus where there is wine is just normal. You want to put an amount of wine that tells people it's okay to drink, but not so much wine on the table that tells people that you should get drunk. This is advice, is not halacha. But I would say, put a reasonable amount of wine on the table so that, you can have a cup of wine, but you're not suggesting to people to have six cups of wine. Okay? And chula b'chula in terms of how much hard alcohol and stuff like that you want to have on the table. Personally, I do think that there's something nice for especially people who are used to drinking and non-religious people to have a little bit of a wine will open them up to sing a little bit more, to ask another question. But you don't want it to be a totally crazy, wild, crazy party. And because that's not cool. And also then they're just going to think that Shabbos is just a party instead of this kind of harmonious balance. We're going to sanctify the holy and the food and the wine, but not just getting drunk. So that's my advice in terms of alcohol. Make sense? Cool? Okay, great. Next awkward situation. One second. Awkward divrei Torah that sometimes people love to offer. I'll give you an example. So a few years back, I'm doing my Shabbos meal in the Rova. I like to do outdoor meals. And if it's an outdoor meal that's open to everybody, it means you're going to get all sorts of characters. You're going to get Jews, non-Jews. You're going to get religious, not religious. You're going to get all sorts of people. So it was Parshas Mishpatim, I remember. And a big group, a mix of people. And some frummy guy gets up there and he says, can I give a Dvar Torah? And I said, sure, no problem. And he starts going this long drasha about how it turns out that slavery is actually a Jewish value. And there's nothing wrong with slavery. Oh, it's beautiful. God. And he's going on and on and on. And the non-Jews are just like, what is going on here? And they're just all confused. So after a while, I found a way to shut the guy up. But you should... So we should talk about that. But this happens. This has happened many a time in my Shabbos situations. So what do we do about that? How do we avoid the scenario? And what do we do if we're already in the scenario? So let's start with the first question. How do we avoid the scenario of people giving really awkward Divrei Torah?
What do you... Also, the signs for awkward, not the right type. Like,
right.
You don't give a Divrei Torah quoting 10 sources to people who can never write
Hebrew. Right, nachon. Right? Or like in Parshas Mishpatim, there's like 50 mitzvahs. There's a lot to talk about. You don't have to pick the particular one of like, you know, killing Amalek and like slavery. Like we can save that for the next Shabbos meal. Like, so yeah. So somehow people have a talent of giving the most awkward possible or uncomfortable Dvar Torah. So what do we do with that? How do we stop that beforehand? And what do we do when we're already in that situation? What advice would you girls give me? Yes.
Maybe you can like have someone designated to give us Dvar Torah before the meal.
Excellent. Excellent. Especially when you're dealing with a big meal, like my meals tend to be, I've learned that there's some things that I can trust that it won't go haywire, right? Like a gratitude round. There's not that much awkward that you could say if you just say, you know, what was one grateful moment in your week? Pretty much everyone will have something nice to say. But for Dvar Torah, one guy's going to say 1 minute, another guy's going to give me a 25-minute drasha with poo-poo, right? So it could be the easiest way to solve it is just to designate beforehand, say, Maishi, I trust you, you're going to give a life-changing Dvar Torah, and don't necessarily open it up for everybody because it's too risky. Again, you have to know your crowd. If you kind of have a feel for your people, it's a more intimate Shabbos table, you know, and you can trust that most people there are normal, so maybe not. Then maybe it's nice to just let anybody who wants share. So it's very situational. Good. What else? What other advice would you girls give me? Either avoid it beforehand or if you're already stuck in it.
Don't let random people speak.
Okay, so you agree. Just
not like don't let them speak, but like there's ways through
body language, through like looking at different people who do you want to give the Dvar Torah to. Okay.
Like personally we have a family friend whose son became very, very religious and like he was at our house for Rosh Hashanah 1 year, and like we have people who like my relatives who are not religious at all, and the type of Dvar Torah he would give would most likely be something they would find
inappropriate,
offensive, or whatever. And so, right.
So don't give him that.
Not that we don't want to hear what he has to say. It's not the right time.
Right. Okay. So again, a lot of it, and this will come up as a recurring theme, has to do with planning beforehand, figuring out where you want to go with the meal, and then thus kind of to the best of your ability planning the trajectory. Great. Let's say you're already stuck in it. He's already saying the Dvar Torah and everyone's all like awkward. Then what do you do? And I've actually had literally like I said the Dvar Torah and then someone just got up there and say, you know, what the rabbi said, it was totally shtuyot and don't listen to that, and like arguing mamish with me in front of me, and like I've had all sorts of crazy shit. I have a lot of interesting people come to my meals. So what do you do? What do you do about that?
So, distract
so first of all, but sometimes the truth is,
serve the next course.
Right. Sometimes the truth is, there is nothing really to do. You hope that he finishes really fast, but sometimes you can motion him through body movement. Like, oh, great. You're doing amazing. As soon as he's like finishes his paragraph, you can be like, oh, that was amazing. Okay. Does anyone else want to say Dvar Torah? Or, oh, wow, we're running a little low on time. I was awesome. And I really appreciate that thought. You do it in a way which is sweet and funny, but not too embarrassing to him, hopefully. But at the same time, you do have to factor in his awkward situation that he kind of put himself in versus the needs of the cloud. So you have to kind of find the balance. Obviously, we never want to embarrass someone publicly. So if we can just wait, and it's not that bad, just wait an extra 30 seconds and he'll finish. Good. But also something you could just, by you acting a little tense, he'll figure out that you're a little tense, depending on his level of social awkwardness, and hopefully he can pick it up without you having to openly embarrass him in public. Yeah.
Or, what if like what he's saying is like detrimental to the people that are there? Like,
oh, so like it's happened to me. So yeah, I have a group which is Jews and Christians, and the guy goes up and starts talking about how we are the chosen people, and you know the Goyim, they hate us or something to that extent.
So
what do you do in that situation? So if it's really, really, really bad, you might actually have to cut him off. But what's most important is that you got to have in your back pocket some cash Torahs, which are nice and pluralistic and fluffy. Okay, so at your next opportunity, when you're sharing a Dvar Torah, you say, you know, God chose us to be the chosen people so that we can let the rest of the world know that they're also chosen. And they, too, are in the image of Hashem or something like that. You got to have in your back pockets nice things to say to kind of bring the Avira up so that people don't walk away thinking that, you know, religious Jews are a bunch of crazies. So that's what I would suggest. Try to have nice, positive, fluffy Torah that you can kind of, by the end of the meal, everyone will feel honored. And even if there was that one crazy guy, they'll just laugh it off and say, he's just a crazy guy. But most people here are nice and loving. So that would be my best recommendation. And again, I would probably say the easiest thing that why I do in my later years, I've learned, especially because I have big Shabbos meals, I let people share either in small groups. So let's say I have like different tables. So 1 to 5 people can share, but I don't usually have one person come and speak before 35 people unless I know absolutely I can trust this guy, that he'll give a short, concise speech, something meaningful, and he won't say anything that's going to offend anybody. Sometimes I'll just won't, and I'll just do it myself or have my wife speak because it's just not worth the risk. But I'll have people be able to share in other ways, okay? We'll get more into that, Bezrat Hashem, in other classes. Okay. What other awkward situations come up? So here's a common one. It actually just happened to me 2 weeks ago. What happens when someone wants to give a contribution? They want to give a gift to the meal that you're doing. And they pull up to you and offer you a 200 shekel coin on Shabbos. What do you do?
It's pretty. You can't say that you don't
touch money. Oh, that's very good. So first of all, that is exactly what I would do. I would just be honest, and I'd be very appreciative. Like, thank you so much, so sweet. But I can't take muks on Shabbos. It's against the law. And they'll probably be moved and say, wow, more important than money is his values. And if you really want, you can say, you are allowed to tell them, if they're not Jewish especially, if you just drop it, you know, just put it, leave it somewhere. And we've actually discovered random money in our house, like they dropped in places. So that is one thing that you could do. Actually, this last time I had someone who I thought was a religious Jew, give me an envelope, which did have a very sweet, thank you so much, such a beautiful meal, but then it had 200 shekel in it. So I was like, that's weird. I mean, he seems like he's a religious Jew, but he should know better. So it was awkward. So what do you do? I could just ignore it and say, I don't know, but am I allowed to benefit from that money? And, you know, is it maybe my obligation to teach him, to educate him a little bit? So what I did is I asked one of my poskim if I'm allowed to benefit from the money. And he said, yes, he didn't mean to break Shabbos. So you're allowed to take that money and buy your next Shabbos meal with it. And then what I did is I gave him the compliment sandwich, which is like, compliment. Thank you so much. I really loved your letter. Compliment at the end. You know, it's so awesome having you, and you bring such good energy to the meal. In between, by the way, I'm sure you didn't know this, but actually we don't carry money on Shabbos. I'm sure it was just an honest mistake. And that way I'm giving him a little bit of, not muster, but I'm just like teaching him. But since there's so many compliments in between, such good energy, most likely he won't be insulted. And that indeed is what happened. He took it very good. He said, oh, sorry, I forgot. But he wasn't insulted, and it was all good. So that's what I'd recommend. Yes?
Can you do like a table or something? Not like the meal table, but like,
so I wouldn't do that on Shabbos. I wouldn't do that on Shabbos because you're basically encouraging people to take money.
Like at a bar mitzvah.
Yeah.
On Saturday night and on a Friday afternoon, go for it. But on Shabbos particularly, I personally don't think it's appropriate to talk about money. And I think you're getting yourself into halachic problems. Taking food is fine, as long as it's kosher, which we have to get to, but that's okay. Serving the food on the table, no problem. But as long as it's kosher. But money, I would avoid. By the way, that leads me to a more general topic. Should you encourage people to donate? Is it better? Is it you lose more than you gain when it comes to donations for a Shabbos meal? So I would say like this. It depends on the nature of your Shabbos meal. If it's just you and your, I don't know, five friends at your college campus, I don't think it's inappropriate to ask for money. It's like weird. It's like they're coming to your house. Like it's supposed to be a gift. It's not appropriate, in my opinion. People generally want to give a grape juice or some cookies and cake. Fine, but don't ask for money. But if my Shabbos meal is like a big meal, I have 50 people coming sometimes, and it's kind of expensive. I'm not a millionaire. So what do you do? Is it appropriate in that scenario to ask for donations? So it depends. There are definitely outreach centers. A lot of times Chabad will do this, which will recommend or even ask for money. They say it's 25 shekel, or at Seder's, they'll say it's 100 shekel to register in advance. And it's not a problem, and I think it's fine. Personally, what I like to do is I don't like to ask people for money, because then it feels like you're a business. You're a caterer, right? I'm not a tzaddik doing you showing you the beauty of Shabbos. I'm a businessman, even though that's not true, but it might feel a little bit like that. It might take away. Personally, what I like to do is but at the same time, it does help. So what I often do is before Shabbos, I'll say, if anybody would like to make a donation to contribute to further Shabbos meals, b'simcha, very happy to accept through bits or whatever, before Shabbos or after you make a money transfer, but I don't make it the required part of the Shabbos. This is a gift that I'm giving to you, and if you want to give a gift towards my charity, then wonderful. And then they feel like they're giving from the goodness of their heart instead of it being an obligatory type of thing. But again, this is very much dependent. I don't know if you girls are going to be doing 100-person meals. It depends on the nature of each specific Shabbos meal. Cool? Makes sense? So that's a little bit about money and stuff like that. Okay. What else? Awkward situations which come up. Let's see. Okay. We mentioned food. Okay? This does happen sometimes. People like to bring food. Okay? So what's the deal? If it's the type of person that you assume is a religious Jew that keeps kosher, so truth is you can eat their food. You can assume that their food is kosher, but I would be hesitant to put that food before other people. Because other people are coming on the assumption that they're eating Rav Kalman's food. They don't think that they're eating that random lady's food. So I would eat it. If it's other people, then I would feel obligated to just double check that it's kosher. But the best to avoid this situation, what I do is I just tell people, please only bring food that has a kosher symbol. If you want to bring food, then bring one that has a kosher symbol, because that way everyone can feel comfortable eating it. Again, if these are good friends and everyone knows each other and everyone trusts each other, then you can rely upon it being kosher. But if you don't know their background, you don't know how strict they are about kosher, then that would be the best thing to do. I actually have had situations where people have brought non-kosher food to the Shabbos table. So what do you do in that situation? Use common sense. What do you do? First of all, you say thank you. I really appreciate it, because they did try to do a nice act. And then, when they're not looking, you put it aside in the kitchen and you throw it away. Or put it in the back of the fridge, and when they're not looking, do what you got to do with it. But you shouldn't serve non-kosher food. Which is pretty obvious. But you also don't want to embarrass them. It could happen that they'll call your bluff, but it's very, very unlikely. And they're going to be like, where's my cake that you serve?
I think people understand also. But like kosher, it's more of like a...
More complicated. Yeah, people get that there's different levels. And again, what I personally recommend, I tell people not to bring food at my table so much. I just say, if you want to contribute to the meal, you can donate, and that's it. That way, you're just less messy with all these things. But it all depends on the nature of what particular Shabbos type of meal that you're or event that you're doing. Okay, so that's a little bit of obviously chametz is a little bit more complicated, because you're not really even supposed to have own chametz. So it doesn't mean you have to right away take it and throw it away in front of their face. But you do the same trick. You say, "Oh, thank you so much," and you bring it to your wife. Your husband, they throw it into the garbage as soon as they're not looking. Okay, but you are not allowed to own chametz. So, it's a pretty unlikely situation, but it could happen. You could see it making like a sitcom when they brought chametz on Pesach or something like that. Okay, a few more awkward situations with the little time that we have left. what happens, and this actually happened to me, remember when I was in the army, when there's extra people that come to your Shabbos table, right? You had 7 seats, and then that random guy just came. I don't know who invited him. You know, they figured they could just schlep him along. They didn't know. And you have that extra guy. So what do you do? What do you do when you have that random extra guy? And I guess I'm going to ask the question the same way I did before. How do you avoid the scenario beforehand? And what do you do if you're already stuck in the situation?
You make everyone who's like coming tell you, like, you know.
Okay, so you could communicate before and say, listen, you should know that, you know, if you think there's any chance that people are going to bring extra people, we only have 7 spots, so don't bring in random stragglers.
If you think it might happen, set an extra table.
Exactly.
It used to be a guy in my community who just like randomly showed up to my house for meals, like over 2 years we do this. And like he wouldn't tell us when he was coming, so we would just set an extra seat. We'd be like, oh, Sam would probably show up.
Right.
Sometimes he would, sometimes he wouldn't.
Right. So some people might find that annoying, but if you're a tzaddikus, like apparently your family was, then that's exactly what we do at our Shabbos table. We try our best to have extra plates and extra space because, especially when you're doing big meals, it almost always happens that there's random people who come, random people don't show up, random people do show up. That's just how it is. And to me, you never want to turn someone down if you don't have to. Not only because it's kind of embarrassing, you know the story with Bar Kamsa and Bar Kamsa, you really don't want to embarrass someone in public. Beyond that, it also doesn't make you look good from the other people. When they see you're supposed to be the Avraham Avinu, welcome everyone to your home, and you just said no to this guy and sent him away, it doesn't look good. So you really want to avoid that. I remember when I was in the army, I actually showed up to someone's Shabbos table. I was that chutzpahdik guy. I thought it was one of these, you know, outreach meals that anybody could just show up. And he actually counted the chairs in front of me and was like, sorry, find somewhere else. And I remember to this day, it like really scarred me. It really made me think that when I make a Shabbos meal, I don't want to ever do that. Now that I make Shabbos meals and I'm married, I realize I understand where he's coming from. I understand that it's sometimes hard and there's a lot, it could cause shalom bias issues if a lot of people are just coming all the time. But still, I do think that it can really be really hurtful. And you throw someone in the street. And in this case, especially because I felt if I wouldn't have been religious, if I wouldn't have had a kippah on my head, then he would have made space for me. But because I was religious already, he felt like, he'll be fine. And I think that's really painful experience. So in my humble opinion, you want to avoid that. That's really your last possible scenario. Another thing that, you know, sometimes I'll do is I'll have a backup plan. I'll have buddies. I'll have a neighbor. I'll think in the back of my head that, you know, if I'm really, really stuck and there's no space in my house, where can I send this guy so that he won't be fully rejected? Right? So here in Yerushalayim, we have a rabbi, Rabbi Machlis, and he has every single Shabbos, 3 meals a week. So I know in the back of my head, if I'm really stuck, I could walk in to the way of Machlis or something like that. So I have some sort of backup plan in one way or another. It would be my advice. I'll tell you a great story since our time is short. I like ending it with a fun story. It's a crazy story. I may have mentioned this before, but it's worth repeating. So this was mamash a miracle. I finished my Shabbos prep early. It never happened before. I don't remember ever, but I mamash had 2 free hours in Erev Shabbos. It was a very small meal we were hosting, I think 4 people. And I went up to my roof and I learned to prepare, get myself in the shop space, and it happened to be the Baal Shem Tov's birthday. Okay, and the theme of the Shabbos meal would be the Baal Shem Tov. You know, I love Chassidus, I'm a little bit of a Chassid, and I wanted to dedicate it to the Baal Shem Tov, and I read a story. Listen to this story. How did the Baal Shem Tov come to the world? So it says in this book, his parents were tzaddikim. So in the heavenly chambers, they decreed these parents are going to have a child, Yisrael Baal Shem Tov. Going to light up the world. But then the Satan said, wait a second. He's a tzaddik to the religious Jews. But is he a tzaddik to non-religious Jews? Maybe he's not so nice to non-religious Jews. So we have to give him a test. So in the heavenly chambers, he said, good idea. And they sent to the father and mother of the Baal Shem Tov a person who was brazenly, openly breaking Shabbos. He was carrying a knapsack with wood on his back. So parents of the Baal Shem Tov, what did they do? They invited him in They said, come have a Shabbos meal. They said, but I don't believe in Shabbos. He said, we don't care. Come. And they gave him food and drink, and they gave him a beautiful Shabbos meal. And it was decreed in heaven, these are going to be the mom and dad of the Baal Shem Tov, because they showed everlasting love to everyone. They are going to have a student like the Baal Shem Tov who's going to show love towards every religious Jew. That's the story I read. Good. I went down to the Kotel that night, and I davened at the Kotel. It was amazing, as it always is. And I went to Jeff Seidel to pick up my four guests for my Shabbos meal. And guess what? Two of them canceled. So I went to my wife, and I said, you think it's possible maybe we could try to pick up some more guests? Because, we have extra food. And she said, sure, go find them. So I ran back to the Kotel. And who do I see walking down to the Kotel? A guy from Tel Aviv. You could see, he has a white kippah that's, blowing off, And he has a knapsack on. So I'm like, knapsack? Just like in the story I read. What are the odds? So I said, this is my man. So I go after the guy. And I say, hey, you need a Shabbos meal in Hebrew. And he said, betach, I need Shabbat Shabbat. Can I come by you? I said, no problem, of course. Him and his friend. Two for two. I said, amazing. And then he looked at me and said, tonight's the yard site. Tonight's the birthday of the Baal Shem Tov. The secular guy tells me. I'm like, how do you know that? So the most famous birthday. So I'm like, I know. I came to Tel Aviv because of Baal Shem Tov's birthday. I'm like, wow. So he came to my house. And the entire night, he was a star. Telling us stories about the Baal Shem Tov. Telling us Hasidic stories. This guy you never would have thought was religious came to my house, and he was the star of the Shabbos meal. Okay? 2 months later, I'm on my rooftop on Sukkot, and, I remember I was doing a little kumzitz with the Raita boys that I taught at the time, and I get a knock at the door. And who is it? It's that guy who was a homeless guy, but he came back to my house. He remembered where I lived, and he comes to my door. I'm like, what's up? He's like, I got you a present. And he brought me the Baal Shem Tov and the Kedusha Slavi, two Hasidic masters, and he gave it to me. And I still have it in my Sfarim closet. And I just felt like it was, an amazing Ashkacha process. I felt like Hashem was giving me a big hug. When you show love towards other Jews, regardless of how religious they are at this point, then all the gates of Shemayim are opened. So if I have one, closing advice for this class, whether they're religious or not religious, the main thing is to show them love. Of course, we always have to know how to navigate the halacha, but the main thing is that when you show people that you love them, their hearts are open, and their love shines back. And then I believe that you open up their hearts to receive Hashem's light. So Hashem should bless us to open up our hearts to other Yidden. And my homework for y'all is, again,